Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here in the studio with a bevy of guests. I'm very excited to have these folks with us. First up, let me give you a little rundown of this week's show, because you'll be excited. For the Q&A, we have our own Danny Huerta back in the studio to answer a question from a girl who is interested in dating a guy. I think she is dating him, actually, but he kind of has a sexual past, and so she's working through that. What should she talk to him about? What shouldn't she? And where do they go from here? For our culture segment, I'm very excited because this is our first ever time featuring Joe Wheeler. He is known as America's Storyteller. I think, in fact, Dr. Dobson himself has given him a massive endorsement, calling him the keeper of the story. And he is going to read a Christmas story for us as our culture segment from his latest edition, basically. He has a number of books. He comes out with a Christmas compilation book every year of Christmas stories. It's called Christmas in My Heart, and I think this is volume 19 this year, so it's the longest running Christmas compilation, I think he told me. So Joe Wheeler, he's just an awesome guy, and you will hear him share a Christmas story. So a great time to grab a cup of hot chocolate and listen to that. But for our roundtable, in preparation for you being able to sit down with your hot chocolate, for our roundtable, we're going to talk about going home for the holidays. And for some of you just cringed as I said that, and some of you are like, woohoo, and some of you are just glad to be going anywhere because maybe you're finishing finals or you're just coming off of a bad week at work. But we all know that there is a certain amount of stress involved in that. Sometimes it's good stress and sometimes it's bad stress, but it can be a number of different things and it all plays into it. So how do you deal with your family when you go home for the holidays? So we're going to kick it off right here. I'm going to introduce our guests today. First of all, do have Danny here in the studio for
I'm
our roundtable
as
well.
Of guests,
you
right?
are.
Yeah,
you're part
that was
of the
a
bevy.
Word, by the you're, way.
It's a twofer. It's a twofer. We have you for the Q&A and for the roundtable, so that's exciting. So
thanks for having me.
Our own Danny Huerta here with us, and he is a counselor here at Focus on the Family. In addition to, I'm looking forward to him sharing some of his own experiences as well from family life, growing up, past and present. Then we have my friend Amy Adams here with us. Amy, welcome.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Very good to have Amy. Those of you who heard me talk about Europe, Amy is the one who went to or met me over in Europe, met my sister and I over in London and toured England and Scotland with us. So a good friend. She's also a marriage and family therapist, now working in managed care. But so she kind of brings
over to the dark side. Sorry.
Yeah. So she brings a double perspective to the conversation as far as that goes. But she and I have walked through a fair amount of family drama between our two families, so this will be fun to share from our own experiences in that, but good times with that. And then Tracy Monteith. Tracy, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Tracy is works here at Focus as well in our Family Ministries Department. I just have gotten to know her since August when I kind of moved over to the Boundless team. And Tracy, I wanted to have on the show because she kind of has a double perspective as well. Both, you know, experiences that she remembers growing up. Oh, actually, you have a trifold perspective. Experiences she had growing up. She's also the mom of adult children, four adult children.
Yes.
So she's going to provide that perspective of just what it means for a mom, for a parent to anticipate kids being at home over the holidays or coming home or not coming home. Is that good or bad? We maybe won't have her call out names for them, but that's okay. But that, and then she's also a pastor's wife. And so she and her husband, I'm sure, have to deal often with dramas within a church family and people, you know, church members who are like, my son said he was coming home and now he's not and I don't know what to do. Can I come to your house for Christmas? So
exactly. Poor thing.
She has to pick up all the, you know, the left behinds, the folks who, you know, whatever. So, well, let's go ahead and kick off the discussion because I'm sure we have people in our audience from a number of these different walks of life. And let's just start out by saying when you think of Christmas and go, whether it's going home for Christmas, whether it's staying home for Christmas, what does that look like for you?
Well, we play a lot of games. We have fun with that, and one of the memorable games is we have a white elephant exchange, and some people get pretty heated. You know, they lose something in there, and personalities flare up, and it's interesting to see that happen in a white elephant.
That's a unique way to work out the family drama.
Yeah,
I mean, it gives a vehicle for it.
A new dynamic, So we enjoy it, but There's always, well, usually there's somebody hurt by a present being stolen. We have to remind them of the rules that, It is going to be stolen. Don't get too attached, you know. And but overall, it's just a really positive experience as far as playing games and enjoying one another. But there's certainly personalities within our family that influence the communication. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think for me, it's my favorite holiday to start with. And I'm one of those idealistic people, though. So I have this idea in my head of what it's going to be like. And as a single, every year I'm trying to figure out, where am I going? Mm-hmm. So the framework, I have family here in Colorado. I have family in Arizona. Am I traveling? Where am I going? Am I staying home? Trying to figure all those things out every year can be kind of stressful.
Yeah, and I think that can be a challenge for a single person. In fact, I was on Chris Fabry's show last week on Moody, and I mentioned that to him about the question of what is home. You know, it says I'll be home for Christmas, but for a lot of single young adults, it's kind of like, well, where is that? And then you throw into the mix maybe blended families or step families, or you have parents on different coasts or whatever, and you have to pick and choose, and it can become pretty tricky. So, Tracy, how about you?
Well, from a parent's perspective, I've got my children. One of them, the youngest one, is the only one that's still in school. She's a senior in high school this year. So the three boys are adults, and one of them is in the Navy. So he's up in Washington State with his wife. And so that's kind of a new thing as far as where I am in life, is encouraging them to have their own family Christmas. But at the same time, there's that heartstring that's pulling that I want them all home. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be different this year to try to work that out and enjoy having those home that can be home, but then encouraging those that can't be home that's okay. And that's a really hard thing. There's a lot of parents out there that don't want that to be okay. They want Christmas to be at my house because I'm the mom and I always will be. And so that's difficult.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend whose mom and dad, she and her sisters were married, and they kept sending them listings. They were like, okay, this home is for sale down the street, and this one over here across the street is for sale. And like, her mom's bona fide goal was to get all of them on the same street so that they would all be living together and all be. And she was like, I don't even know how to go there. I don't even know how to have this conversation with my mom, because that is not happening. So it was just interesting. I mean, it was just cute, you know, to see that perspective. But I think that's good. So for the kids that are at home, that are local, kind of has Christmas shifted over the years then, Tracy, for you, as far as, like, obviously when little kids are little, Christmas, look, you know, it's kind of all compact and you have gifts and you do whatever. But now maybe they have their own agendas or whatever.
I think it's different in that it's not so much now about the children and the gifts. We're looking at it at Christmas with a different perspective. I think it's more about the family time, because as a parent now, I can see how precious that time is and how quick it goes away. And there may come a time where all four of them are on their own and away from the house and cannot make it back for Christmas. And that's just going to have to be something that we work through, just me and my husband, you know, to understand that that's how we started our family. So it's okay to go back there and to be just the two of you. But it's interesting this year, because they're old enough now to have, they're working and they have their own money. So this is about the first year that none of them have asked us for money to buy presents for everybody else in the family. So it's been really...
That's a nice milestone to be in.
Oh, yes. I'm loving this milestone. Yes.
Saving some money. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're having fun trying to determine what they want to get everyone for Christmas.
Yeah. So if you, like, as a mom, if you could only have, like, one thing happen this Christmas, what's most important to you to make Christmas Christmas?
I think the more time I can spend with my family, just for us, it's more about the family time, having that. And certainly a phone call from those that are away from home is important. You know, those in your audience that are not going to be able to make it back home for Christmas, and you may have a mom or dad that's, you know, really upset that you can't change your travel plans or, you know, make it. And I think that phone call is important, just so that they can hear from you.
Okay. Now, okay, let's talk to the two therapists here, because I know we have a lot of we have a lot of people who are just like, I don't, you know, I talk about idealism, Amy. A lot of people mm-hmm. are like, I love going home. I have this memory of what Christmas used to be. Mm-hmm. And then they go home and they're just crazy people, whether it's people in their own family, whether they're the crazy one. And what is it about, why do people feel like at Christmas dinner, they need to unload all their grievances against people from the previous year? Because I have totally heard that happening. And it's like all of a sudden just these like wounds are opened and all of a sudden the ham is getting cold while everyone's just like arguing about who said what about whom and why did you tell me to do that and whatever. And it all comes out on the holidays.
Well, you know, personally, I think that there's a lot of expectations that come with Christmas, but also many people carry stress and they're more vulnerable to bring those things out. I mean, it's just, if you think of Christmas, it's riddled with stress. You look at the ideal and everybody's happy and smiling and there's a lot of romance, but the reality is there's a lot of loneliness. People use Christmas as a marker to get through Christmas. And so a lot of marriages, they say, well, let's just get through Christmas and then we'll get divorced, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of idea that there's togetherness and there's going to be, that's probably the time when a lot of families do get together to have communication. They should probably do it another time, but they're just, a lot of people are stressed and they don't manage stress very well. We just, as individuals, I think we, all of us have a flaw in the way we handle stress, especially if we haven't slept much, and a lot of people don't sleep much during this time at Christmas time, mm-hmm. right? They're shopping, there's deadlines to get through, and then there's also the finances, you know, you start saying, oh, I've spent this much, and I'm overcharged now, and there's just a tremendous amount of stress and expectation. It's just impregnated with that, right?
Yeah,
and then
I think
there's
you,
disappointment.
Exactly. I think you add all that stress to the family roles and the dynamics that, I mean, you kind of walk back in and, you know, most people growing up, if you think about your dinner table, you had a place where you sat, right? This unwritten rule. So all these unwritten rules and roles come back. And, you know, I know sometimes I find myself acting like I did when I was younger and I was kind mm-hmm. of a bossy older sister. Sorry to my brother. I don't know how you put up with me. mm-hmm. But, you know, that kind of comes out with the stress mm-hmm. because you have your personality quirks and your ways of dealing with it. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's ever anybody's intention that it comes out at the table, but maybe by that point, everybody's just done all their little nice hellos and yeah. it just is at a breaking point by then.
Well, and maybe some people played the role of like mediator when they were growing up. And mm-hmm. so now they kind of resent that because they're finding themselves back in that. And they're like, man, I like moved away and I thought I got away from this. And now mm-hmm. it's like all that is coming back just because of that, you know, kind of focus during the holidays as mm-hmm. well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, what's interesting is around the holidays, everybody takes their portraits, right? Mm-hmm. And portraits have always
take our portraits. So.
Well, singles don't. Yeah, a lot of people pictures. With their family, they'll get called and they'll say, "Hey, let's all do a portrait of our family.
Right?
Guess
yeah,
grown up. We need a new one, you know." And portraits to me have always been, I mean, they're nice, but they're somewhat of a fake representation of really who everyone is in that picture. Everyone looks just perfect, you know. Mm-hmm. We look
like that all the time, Danny.
You get the truth. That's right. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, that everybody just looks just right, and the kids are all smiling, no one's blinking, and it'd be neat to have a portrait of the reality of what the family's going through in each stage, and having Christmas be a time where people share and say, mm-hmm. "Hey, you know, God's been with us this year." So it'd be neat to have that, but it just doesn't happen that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a there seems to be a certain dynamic too, as far as going back and realizing that, wow, okay, so you do have to deal with these people. Sometimes they're I know my family, when I go home, it's generally pretty great. We're kind of like the game players too, and it's always a really fun time, and it's a very small town, and so it's just tends to be kind of restful, and I'm not necessarily in charge of anything, so I kind of like it. You know, I kind of feel like I have all my crazy pressure things before I go there. But you do have, you know, you have certain, sometimes you'll have people in the larger family gatherings where you have like the loose cannons mm-hmm. who kind of like say some stuff, or else you have the people that are like bottling stuff up, or you have the passive aggressive people that, you know, try to put all their issues on you, as far as like, well, you know, the guilt trips and stuff like that. Is there a way to go in anticipating that and kind of knowing how to head those kind of things off at the pass?
I would say anticipate it. I mean, it's going to come up. There's at least one person in the family yeah. that's going to bring some baggage and bring some of those things in. So I think just being equipped of saying, well, you know, I'm in charge of myself. How am I annoying? How am I irritating? And and just responding to the person instead of reacting to them is important.
Yeah, I would agree. I think having a plan is really huge in that. You know, I know for me, you know, when I go home for Christmas, my mom moved to Yuma, Arizona a few years ago, and I didn't grow up there. I mean, that's not home to me. I don't have any ties there. And so I'm kind of already a little out of my element, but it's kind of like, okay, you know, I need to let my mom be my mom, and I love her, and, you know, we all have our quirks, and I need to not go in and, like, say, hey, you know, why do you do your life this way? How come you have this routine? Why do you have that routine? Mm-hmm. You know, and just really anticipate some of that. And, you know, like Danny said, have that plan and know what to anticipate. Yeah. You know, I think probably, you know, knowing if your family home is really small and you're going to be on top of each other, maybe you want to try to find a way to do a hotel room so you can have a little breathing space at the end and makes the time more enjoyable, you know, while everybody's together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know? I totally had some weird adjustments to that, too, because I usually stay with my mom when I go home. And I have to remind myself, okay, here's when she watches Fox News, and here's, and I just think it's going to be all like, let's just sit down and chat and just hang out and whatever. And she has her little schedule and she has to keep to it. And she cannot miss O'Reilly. She cannot miss O'Reilly. Wow. Even, wow. I mean, it doesn't.
She's committed.
Exactly. Okay. She needs to, and she wants me to, you know, watch it with her, and then she'll make comments about it. And I'm just like, okay, here we go. But, you know, she's flexible on most things, but she has her little, she's also, oh, the other thing is, you know, a lot of, I think, young adults think, you know, I'm on my own time, I have my own money, and I'll just do whatever I want when I want. No, staying with my mom means that generally prior to 6 a.m., she is buzzing around her house and may or may not come and wake me up and say, I made some eggs. Do you want any? And I'm like, it is 6:15. What is happening here? So, you know, it's just kind of her little, I'm actually entering into her world. And so I need to be prepared for that, I think.
That's great. Yeah. You go with the flow, sounds like.
Yeah. Try to.
I think along the lines of anticipation and having a plan, too, it's important to communicate about what the holiday is going to look like. Because I know, you know, for me, there aren't any defaults. Like, who am I going to go see this year? Am I traveling to see my mom? Am I staying with family in town? And I've gotten myself into trouble by assuming things, which was not my family's fault. But I thought, oh, Christmas Eve, we're going to hang out. And yeah, I kind of forgot to run that by them until a few days beforehand and said, so, you know, you want me to bring this over for Christmas Eve? And I got this horrified look from my poor sister-in-law who had plans with friends. And, you know, I hadn't mentioned anything before. And, you know, I had to kind of work through that. So this year I had to be proactive and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Do you have plans? You know, and I think just being out there with the communication is really helpful, especially if you know you're idealistic and you have all these expectations. I mean, all of us have expectations. You just have to be in touch with what they are. So
I think that's huge. Yeah. I think from a parent's perspective, to have the kids say, you know, this is what I plan on doing. I want to hang out with my friends on Christmas Eve, but, you know, I want to spend Christmas Day with you, and try and get that worked out and scheduled. But I think to respect the person's house that you're going to helps a lot. If everybody walks into the situation with the same frame of mind of, you know, not so much that we're going to go home and we can be kids again, but we're going back to my mom and dad's home. And so we need to respect their rules and their schedule. And, you know, if we're going to have Christmas at a brother's house, then even the parents need to go into that brother's house having respect for what he does and what his family is going through. And I think that's just really big. The communication is a huge issue. Because if you know ahead of time, then you can get a little bit of that stress out and, you know, a little bit of the angst away from it and step back and say, okay, that's fine because I have this block of time with them.
And I think respecting people lends to a bunch of different things. I remember a couple years ago, I brought, you know, y'all know I have an iPhone and I have my little skull case on it and stuff. And I found myself getting into like text trails with people like back here and stuff. And so I'd be in a family conversation and I would be like texting. I'm like everyone's worst nightmare. I'm like the person that I criticize, you know, like the people that are just texting people. And finally my sister, she didn't know to refer to it as a skull, so she's like, drop the skeleton. So I still remember that, drop the skeleton, and to just realize, wow, yeah, maybe I should be a little bit more focused on the people I'm with and not try to manage too many things at once and be like, you know what, my friends back home are here and they can do their own thing. And
you know, when there's talk about, you know, the schedules and those things, that's when a lot of the guilt comes in from moms and people that are lonely. They say, hey, well, I thought we were going to do Christmas. Usually we did it this way, or this is our tradition. And, you know, especially when there's a dating couple or there's mm-hmm. a new person coming into the family and taking into consideration a new family, mm-hmm. it really creates a lot of tension, especially between the girlfriend and the mom of the guy. And that, I know in my experience, that happened, where initially there was a lot of tension there. And it's important to know that a person is not responsible for someone else's happiness, or if they're going to be happy with what the schedule can be for you to take this new person into consideration.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think that's important to just go in saying, I'm not going to be in charge of my mom's happiness. Mm-hmm. I will look at her with compassion. I understand mm-hmm. this is something she was used to, mm-hmm. and I'll affirm her. I won't be mean about it. But I still have to have boundaries.
Right.
Yeah, and that you can control how you communicate that kindly and thinking of the other person, but you can't control their reaction,
yeah.
I think is huge, because right. a lot of us get caught up in that. And, you know, I will say I feel pretty lucky. My mom is in Arizona, and I have traveled a lot this year, as Lisa mentioned, and I'm really tired, and I don't want to travel this year, so I'm staying home. Mm. And my mom was pretty gracious about it. And she wasn't like, you know, oh, I never see you. I mean, of course she said, well, I'm going to miss you and I wish you were here. And, you know, but I think it's okay to, you know, to give ourselves that grace and that permission to say, you know what, I'm going to do something different this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to maybe tell her, you know, hey, but here is a time maybe a few months down the road where maybe I can come and
yeah,
do, you know.
Exactly.
Give, you know, don't just say like, anyway, it's, you know, ETA whenever I show up. So
I think there should be frequent flyer miles for the guild trips.
Right.
Exactly.
What do you guys think? I mean, those
exactly.
are good. I don't know if there's a prerequisite. Usually it's moms.
You need
I don't
like
know.
A guilt-o-meter or something like that that, you know, rates your mom's voicemail message and tells you how many frequent flyer miles
that's
you
get. That's right. I mean, you should get some, you know, a little reward or something.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, what about just general like personality differences? Because, for example, when I go home at Christmas, there's a bunch of us there. We all have different personalities. And I tend to be the person that's a little bit more like, not outspoken. I mean, in a
very
sense,
quiet,
I guess
I'm
I am.
Sure.
But,
yeah. So you never have
opinions. Very shy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm the one who
I've
always sits
this.
Down with folks and I'm like, so my classic thing would be getting to some version of what has God done in your life this year? And I'm talking to like Scandinavian family members who want to talk about crops and the weather. And it's just like, you know, brick wall. And so, I mean, is it just kind of like personality things and different people who, you know, some don't want all the yakkers, you know, hanging on with them all the time, and you know, and then people will bring up again like these supposedly bona fide beefs that they have with people. When do you try to push through stuff like that and like, you know, make progress in a relationship, and when do you just say, okay, maybe this has to happen another time?
Well, I think you bring your own personality in. So I mean, to say, hey, how's God been doing stuff in your life this year? It's a fair question, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're playing games, some of those things pop out. It depends on how long the gathering is as well. If you guys are together for a week and that's the only week out of the year, usually, you know, by the third, fourth day, you'll get into those types of topics. Mm-hmm. Some people don't see each other throughout the entire year, and then Thanksgiving and Christmas they see each other and they try to throw a bunch of things in, and usually it's kind of small talk if they haven't seen each other throughout the year, communicated.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and I think using Christmas to kind of like deal with all your relational issues is a really bad setup for
mm-hmm.
everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just really, I think, have wisdom about which things you can deal with and which things you can't. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so talk to your relatives about the crops if that's what they enjoy talking about for a while. And then give them mm-hmm. that time, like Danny was saying, and get into the rhythm of being together again. And then maybe some of those other little issues can be dealt with, or
yeah.
big issues just a little bit at a time, you know.
Yeah. And if the rhythm doesn't come, I like the word rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it doesn't come, then maybe it's crops, you know, for that year.
Yeah. And maybe that's okay,
the
you
crops,
know, and it's maybe that's a year God's asking you to kind of give up that, you know, what you'd prefer to have and just let them have, you know, stay in their comfort zone for that year.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it is, you know, it's also we haven't really touched on the topic of, you know, non-Christians within the family or other friends who come over. I mean, I think that's another big thing, too. I mean, it's not, you know, probably when you're all playing a game and there are 25 people there to turn to someone and say, you know, so if you were to die tonight, you know, what, and God said, why should I let you into heaven? What would you say? But, you know, I know some
of your moments. Pick your moments carefully.
You, yeah. Hey, it's your turn.
Lisa's family just wears the T-shirt.
Shirts
with that.
That's
no, that's
true.
Just your mom.
My mom just uses
her
T-shirts to open up.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
She'll have that on her
yeah.
T-shirt.
Christian
for you.
Oh, there you go. You can get one of her T-shirts, Lisa.
I know.
For this year, you just kind of go. Just what
point,
do you think? What
point
do you,
yeah, to
just
the
point,
shirt.
Point to the shirt. Yeah.
That's good. So, okay, one other thing I want to touch on, and Tracy, I want you to weigh in on this, and that is the whole idea of grief, like through the holidays. And I know you've mentioned even at your church, you've already had people lose family members. You've lost members mm-hmm. of your church now heading into Christmas, and kind of that holding out thing. I mean, there are a lot of people that make it through Christmas, you know, mm-hmm. especially the elderly, and then die. So really between Christmas and New Year's is a right. big season for death and grief, and mm-hmm. churches have to deal with that, and families have to deal with that. What are some things that you found to be helpful in helping people walk through that?
From a pastor's wife perspective, mm-hmm. Yes, there. And it's true, and it's I don't know why, but it is true. There are so many deaths around the holidays, and I think it just adds to the stress level for everyone, because there's that anticipation of, oh, it's the 1 year anniversary of mm-hmm. grandma going home, you know, and it's hard to deal with. So I think a lot of people just need to really be sensitive to that. If you're going back home and you know that there has been a death. I mean, there's been a death in the family, and it may not have affected you the same way that it affected your brother or your mom, or mm-hmm. and to be real sensitive to the fact that they might be really emotional mm-hmm. and that, you know, give them some time to kind of process that, because they may have been able to get through that death and they're holding on to it because they know family's coming home for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that just happens mm-hmm. to be the time that it explodes. Mm-hmm. So just, again, the anticipation of this might happen.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a good point, too, with the anniversaries of deaths. I mean, that's mm-hmm, another thing mm-hmm. that you tend to have to deal mm-hmm. with, especially when you're thinking of parents. And we never think of our parents as grieving their parents. But when they do lose them, they grieve them as well. And so there are anniversaries there. And, of course, my mom being a widow, you know, it's always kind of a harder season, you know, thinking mm-hmm. of my dad and what was it like to put up the tree with my dad and to go and cut down the tree with my dad and different things. So, you know, mm-hmm. usually I spend some time with her just reminiscing about him and sharing memories, which is, I think, a good thing for her. Yes. She's always
yeah,
appreciative of that.
Letting people talk about that loved one, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, share those happy memories together. And, you know, I know for me, we lost my dad right before Thanksgiving, and it's mm-hmm. been a little over 3 years, and still every Christmas, I'm like, oh yeah, this is like the fourth Christmas without dad. And, you know, it's still something that I remember and you notice, you know, and so I think it definitely helps me to talk about it. I know, you know, you kind of know those people in your life who it's okay to talk about with, and those who are like, what? You should be over that already. What is your problem? Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, those are not the people I'm going to choose to go to talk about yeah. about that. But I think even just having that awareness and letting there be a conversation and, you know, maybe having something that they really, you know, that person really enjoyed and kind of sharing that together over the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Making like a dish or something, mm-hmm, their favorite. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, also that time in January, the beginning of January, is a real low for a lot of people right after Christmas. And mm-hmm. like you were saying, Tracy, anticipating that's going to happen. Maybe coming up with something new that mm-hmm. you could do that year. Maybe it's volunteering at a new place or something where you're giving back or you're challenging your brain a little bit, because it can get stuck. And that's the, I think, the difficulty that people go through is they get stuck in their mind that, oh, now I have to wait a whole nother year for Christmas, or when mm-hmm. is the next holiday? And they looked for the next holiday to survive. Instead mm-hmm. of surviving, maybe mm-hmm. thriving during that time, saying, oh, this is my opportunity for newness. Right. I can maybe try something new in memory of this person, and just challenging yourself, adventure, finding that adventure in life again.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think concentrating on the positive issues, mm-hmm. you know, rather than anticipating the whole, well, my brother's going to be there and we're going to have that same old argument and he's probably going to drag his wife in. And you know, instead of thinking about that, thinking ahead of time how you're going to handle that situation in a positive manner mm-hmm. and just make everything that you can positive about the experience. You know, talk about positive things in your life and, you know, kind of set the example mm-hmm. and see how the rest of the family reacts. And I know with unsaved family members that can be huge when they see you living it instead of just talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard of family gatherings, family holidays that have devolved into fistfights, and where, mm-hmm. I mean, it has become mm-hmm. an all-out brawl and people have taken sides. And I mean, I think that what you all have been saying, cutting a wide swath of grace, giving people their space, learning to listen, keeping sarcasm to a minimum. This is probably not the time of year to yeah. be, you know, entering all your best witticisms against, you know, everyone quipping on so-and-so's Christmas sweater, even if it may be a fashion. No.
Maybe bringing just selflessness in there, just mm-hmm. saying it's not about me. And also, I think this is a people pleaser's nightmare, you know, Christmas, mm-hmm. because you want everybody to be happy, everybody to get along, and that's just not going to happen. That's not reality. And so people mm-hmm. are going to have disappointment. There's pain that comes up. There's people that are going to be annoying, people that are going to say mean things and hurtful things. Just have fun as you go through this and enjoy the people that you're with. And it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah, I think having that expectation is huge. And then I think you referenced it earlier, Danny, kind of knowing, I mean, people may be annoyed with me and the, mm-hmm. something I do and something I don't even know yeah. about. And so, I mean, we really can control ourselves. You know, we can't control all the other things about the situation, but we can go into it and, you know, have prayer support. I mean, that's another thing. I mean, if you have a tough family situation, mm-hmm. my friends usually know if there's something going on. I'm like, hey, so pray for me because this situation might come up. And, you know, then I know I've got people to go mm-hmm. to afterwards and say, okay, this really happened and it was all kinds of crazy. And thanks for praying. And mm-hmm. I did get through it and I'm laughing about it. And, you know, I mean, relationships are messy, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's lonely without them.
Yeah,
so
it's true. Yeah. Good thoughts, everyone. So, all right. Well, Danny did bless us as we came in here with something that he had printed off. It looks like you got this from a comrade. So this is very exciting.
That's right.
A comrade.
We don't want this to be us. So it says a man and his ever nagging wife went on vacation to Jerusalem. While they were there, the wife passed away. The undertaker told the husband, "You can have her shipped home for $5,000, or you can bury her here in the Holy Land for $150." The man thought about it and told him he would just have her shipped home. The undertaker asked, "Why would you spend $5,000 to ship your wife home when it would be wonderful to be buried here and you would only spend $150? The man replied, "Long ago a man died here, was buried here, and 3 days later he rose from the dead. I just can't take that chance." So we don't want this to be us. We don't want this to be our story. We don't want people to have the fear of us coming back again. So think of that. I think these were great thoughts, you guys. Really, really good ideas, not only from your own experiences, but some of your expertise as well. So I appreciate you all.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun to be here.
Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight.
Charlie's Blanket by Wendy Miller. Mary hurried to get her children fed and dressed. It was a cold December day, and they had a long way to walk. Mary cleaned houses 5 days a week. It was the only work she could find that would allow her to also take care of her 3 small girls at the same time. She would drop the older 2 off at the elementary school and take 3-year-old Becky with her. The girls came to her for lunch, and she would be back home again before they were home from school in the afternoon. It was a good arrangement, and it kept her off welfare. She wanted help for no one. "Becky," she called, "hurry, we're all ready to go." Becky ran to the door, a ragged doll with all its hair loved off, cradled in her arms. "I'm all ready, Mama, but we forgot to dress Charlie." Mary glanced at the clock and back down at her daughter's smiling face. Quickly she dressed the doll, wrapped it in its blanket, and handed it back to Becky. Then the little family went out into the cold, dark, early morning. Mama? Laura, 7, and the oldest, took Mary's hand. I'm sorry I forgot, Charlie. Are we awfully late? No, Laura, we're not awfully late. I don't know why we have to dress that stupid doll of hers anyway, complained Cindy. Since she was 6 and in the first grade, she thought of herself as all grown up. And to her, Charlie was a big waste of time. 2 years ago, Mary might have agreed with her. They had been well off then and wanted for nothing. Mary's thoughts traveled back to other times and compared them to now, as she had done a million times. One day everything was fine, and the next day her husband was gone. All he had left behind was a note to say goodbye. No, he had also left behind a wife, 3 small girls, and an empty bank account. As soon as the shock had worn off, Mary tried to start a new life, but it was so hard. She had never had to work outside the home before. Now she was cleaning houses to keep the girls fed. Their clothes were handed down from her employer's children. Most of all, she regretted having to make them walk so far every day, especially in the cold. As for the radical change in lifestyle, the girls had just accepted it as part of life. Laura and Cindy helped as much as they could and tried not to complain. Becky found happiness in her doll. Charlie was her whole world. She never quit smiling as long as she had Charlie. He was always to be dressed for the weather and then wrapped in the precious blanket. It was just an old scrap of blanket that somebody must have dropped in the parking lot. Becky found it there. Mary washed it, and now it was Charlie's. Was Charlie a waste of time? No, Mary decided. He was Becky's happiness. And that most certainly was not a waste of time. As they neared the school, the girls hugged Mary as they always did day after day, then ran in. Farther down the street, Mary turned in at the Littles', Mundy's house. The Littles had been getting ready for Christmas, it seemed, because there was a wreath on the door with a big red bow. Mary was prepared to see all the fancy trimmings inside. Becky wasn't. "Ooh, Charlie," she whispered, as if afraid that her voice might disturb the splendor. "Look at what Mrs. Little got." The room was gaily decorated for Christmas, and in the corner stood a huge Christmas tree. The silver star shining on the top almost touched the ceiling. Glass ornaments, garlands, and tinsel were tastefully arranged on the branches, and underneath was a mountain of parcels wrapped with ribbons and bows. Mary took Becky's coat and hung it up. The little girl just stood looking at the tree. "Becky, I have to get to work now. Promise you won't touch anything?" "I promise, Mama." And she crawled into a big easy chair, and there she stayed for the entire morning, pointing out the pretty ornaments to Charlie and guessing what might be in each of the packages. Laura and Cindy came in at lunch, but they hardly looked at the tree. It hurt to look at it. They knew that there would be no tree for them, just like last year. Money was not to be spent on anything they could do without. They knew it, but it still hurt. The day replayed itself on Tuesday at the Johnsons, on Wednesday at the Harrises, Thursday at the Krebs, and Friday at the Fishers. But on Saturday they were home. After spending a week in the various houses all decked in glorious holiday fashion, Becky suddenly seemed to realize that she was missing out on something. "Why does everyone have a tree in the house, Mama? Why are there so many presents? Is it somebody's birthday? Why don't we have a tree?" Mary had known the question would be asked. Laura and Cindy looked up from the floor where they were playing, waiting for her answer. Mary put away her mending and pulled Becky up onto her lap. "You're a very smart girl. It is somebody's birthday, and I'll tell you all about him. His name is Jesus, and he was born Christmas Day." And Mary told the girls how it came to happen and why there is a Christmas. Becky hugged Charlie close. "Ooh, the poor baby! Was it very cold in the stable?" "I wouldn't want to sleep in a stable, would you?" "I wish I could go there and see it, though." "We can see it," Mary said, and she put her daughter off her knee. "Girls, get your coats on. We're going for a walk." Down the street was a church. Every Christmas, a large creche was set up. There was a wooden stable full of straw and large ceramic figures. High above hung a star. The girls were awed by the simple but beautiful scene. It was just as Mary had said it was, from the story in the Bible. Becky didn't want to leave, even when the cold seeped through her clothing and made her shiver. The next week was just as hard for them. Everywhere they went, it seemed that the world was taunting them with a Christmas that wasn't to be theirs. In the malls, carols played and parents loaded up with the latest toys and games. As Mary picked out economy packs of socks and underwear for the girls' gifts, she tried not to look at the other carts. At Safeway, she whipped through the express line with one lone pack of spaghetti for their Christmas dinner. She laughed at the long lineups of people with their carts full of turkey and fixings. But the laugh was hollow, because she would have loved to be one of those standing in line. Outside, families shouted and laughed as they picked out what each considered the perfect tree, and then strapped it to the roof of their car. Mary tried not to notice. It was Laura and Cindy that finally made her heart well over with bitterness. Sometimes when you are an adult, you can take whatever is dished out. You can take things in stride and make the best of a situation. But oh, how different it is when your child is hurting. Nothing hurts a mother more than the sorrow of her child. And that's how it was with Mary. The school was focused on Christmas, which was only to be expected in December. The teachers had the children making ornaments and stringing popcorn for their trees at home. They wrote letters to Santa. At recess, the children told of the gifts they were expecting. Laura and Cindy said nothing. They did as they were expected in class and tried to avoid the other children at recess. It was at home that they expressed their hurt and anger at the world for leaving them out of Christmas. So the bitterness grew in Mary from the heartache of her girls. Every carol and decoration seemed to make her colder. Every Christmas card or call of Merry Christmas made her hate the season more. Laura and Cindy, taking the cue from their mother as children often do, developed the same attitude. Only little Becky was immune. She rocked Charlie in her arms and told him again and again about baby Jesus, who was born in a stable. She begged the girls daily to take her to the church so she could see the story for true. They would take her grudgingly and drag her back home long before she was finished looking. Christmas morning came in a flurry of snow. Laura and Cindy woke up cold. They ran into Mary's room and burrowed under the covers with her to warm up. Mary cuddled them close and kissed their foreheads. "Merry Christmas," she said. "Merry Christmas, Mama," they echoed. "I'm afraid there aren't a lot of gifts for you girls, but you just go wake up Becky and you can open what there is," she said resignedly. The girls jumped out of the bed and ran to get their sister while Mary got up and dressed. Too soon, they were back. "Where is she, Mama? We can't find her." The words hit Mary like a truck. The three raced through the house, calling her name, checking every closet and corner. They checked the yard and the neighbor's yard. No Becky. They must have missed her when they checked the house, Mary thought. She never goes off alone. They searched the house again. Dear Lord, please help me find her, she prayed as she rechecked every spot a child could possibly be in. I'm sorry for my selfishness. The gifts and the dinner that I prayed for are not important. Forget them and just give me back my Becky. She was frantic now. Then she noticed Charlie. He was carefully positioned in a chair facing a window. Mary's heart raced with her thoughts. Charlie was never out of Becky's sight. And where was his blanket? Becky always insisted that his blanket be wrapped tightly around him at all times. Suddenly, she knew. Stay here, she admonished the girls as she flew out the door into the dark and snowy morning. Down the street she ran until she could see the church. Then she slowed, and tears of release ran down her face as she caught sight of her daughter. The star from the creche was shining down on the manger where Becky had climbed in and was busily covering the baby Jesus with the ratty scrap of a blanket. As she neared, Mary could hear Becky talking. You must be cold. I knew the snow would be falling on you. This is Charlie's blanket, but we will give it to you. He has me to keep him warm. She looked up when she heard the footsteps. Oh, hi, Mama. Becky smiled her beautiful, innocent smile. I was afraid he might have thought we forgot about him on his birthday. Mary plucked her out of the straw and held her tight, the tears now raining unchecked. I did forget, honey. Dear Lord, I'm sorry I forgot. Then she tenderly carried her daughter home, filled at last with Christmas joy. With Christmas carols to cheer them on, they hung the popcorn strings and ornaments on Mary's tallest houseplant. A star made of tinfoil perched on the top. They put the presents underneath, and there was just enough to fit nicely under the little tree. And best of all, Mary made a birthday cake. With their hands joined around the table, they all sang, Happy birthday, dear Jesus. Happy birthday to you. As for Charlie, cradled tightly in Becky's arms, even without his blanket, he was warm. This is a story that appeared in Christmas in My Heart 4, that there is also a story behind the story. A number of years ago, I directed an adult degree program in Texas, and during that time period, I heard read out loud between 500 and 1,000 personal autobiographies. And what I discovered was in every last case, whenever the person got to a point in their life story when there was abandonment, that the voice would slow, the voice would break, and tears would often cause the individual to quit entirely. And what I realized was that when you are abandoned, whether or not it was by a parent or a mate, whoever it is, it leaves lifelong wounds in the psyche. And it does heal over to a certain extent, but the wound is still there. And I've also discovered, as I found out later in talking with the author of this story, that the story is true, the abandonment is true, Becky and the blanket is true, and the low feelings of self-worth that continued to this day are true. And so I think this story has a lot to say to us all about the wounded ones among us. And
there are so many single parents struggling to make it and really having to tackle very rough times.
Sing choirs of angels, sing in exaltation, sing all ye citizens of heaven above. Glory to God, glory in the
up this week's inbox, and I have Denny Huerta in the studio with me. Hey, Denny.
You said that beautifully.
Thank you.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks
well,
for
you know,
me.
Sometimes I like being Hispanic.
Yes.
Swedish
yes.
Hispanic.
Swedish
Hispanic. Yeah. So I do what I can.
It's quite a combo.
You know, we'll see. So, well, thank you so much for joining us and answering this question today.
Thank you.
Looking forward to it. This is going to be, I think this will be applicable to a number of different folks because we hear kind of a version of this a lot. So, we'll just go ahead and launch right in.
Okay.
This is from a female, and she is saying, there's a guy that I've known for a while that has recently said he would be interested in dating me. The problem is, though, he became a Christian 2 years ago, and I know for a fact that before his conversion, he had a relationship with another woman, whom I knew, and that they were sexually involved. Now that we're considering dating, I know I have to talk to him about this. It bothers me, even though I know it happened before he became a Christian. And if there was her, there could have been others. I don't know how to broach the subject or if I should just forget about a relationship. Either way, I know our relationship will take a lot more work than normal. Any suggestions about how to talk about this or how to work through it?
I would say any relationship's going to be take a lot of work. I don't know if it's going to be more work than normal. Everyone brings histories and pasts with them, and it's important to talk about those up front. And so if he has had a history of sexual relationships with other women, it doesn't mean it's the end of the relationship. It just means let's talk about where he's at now. 2 years ago, obviously, he was in a different place in his life, different belief system. So he could be seeing life differently. But it is important to bring it up now and talk about the past and what has happened. Not with the end of the relationship in mind, but maybe seeing if there's a need. Well, obviously, I would recommend premarital counseling if this is going to progress to that, to potential marriage. I would say that right now she's having some concerns, maybe some anxieties about, so if he's done this, am I going to feel uncomfortable? A lot of people have had some type of sexual experience with someone before. Bring it up. Bring it up. And the way that maybe she could bring it up is, you know, I understand that you've probably had sex before. It seems to me that you have. Can we talk about that and just bring it out on the table? How many times and what has been your experience with that? And just maybe having a mentor alongside of her outside of that conversation, but someone she can connect with afterwards to talk about what has come up and her anxieties and how to respond to it. Mm-hmm. If he has had an extensive past, maybe figuring out, does he have mentors in his life? Has he had any, how's he addressing this now?
Yeah. What do you think about, Danny, about her whole, you know, I don't even know if, you know, if I would be okay with this. You know, I think she said, you know, I'm not even sure if I'm okay with this. And I mean, how would she deal with that?
Well, I guess I understand emotionally where she's coming from because it feels tainted. It feels, you know, now her friend and the pictures, images she gets in her mind. Any guy she meets has a potential history that maybe is not known or is there. And so I wouldn't say to close the door. To deal with those emotions is you want to picture maybe some of the history you bring in as an individual. Maybe it's not as severe as that. Both you guys are going to require grace with each other. And what's neat about that is that the brokenness of both of you guys will create a beautiful picture if both of you guys are really centered now on that relationship with Christ and have that as the core of your relationship.
Okay.
I understand where it's coming from. Yeah. It's going to be in any relationship she goes forward with, especially at this age. She's 20. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're both in their 20s.
In their 20s, mm-hmm. Right. So this is a potential, potential ending to the relationship, but it doesn't have to be.
Right.
It needs some further exploration. And, you know, there's a trend right now that a lot of dating couples are going to counseling to see if they should keep going into the engaged part of the relationship. And so this would be an example of, maybe having a counselor guide them through this discussion would be a wise thing. And that's maybe when it's brought up with a counselor present.
Good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for this week's show. Hopefully that was helpful to you, not only to the girl who wrote this, but to anyone else out there who is dealing with this. Do write to us, editor@boundless.org, so we can address your questions in the future. Or if you have any comments or personal experiences or any questions related to this one, write to us about that as well. So that is it for this week's show. We hope you're having a great week. And until next week, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on family.